Hey, everybody, I'm Evan Farmer, and welcome to Disaster Diaries. I'm here with my co-host, Andy, and we're here to interview people who have literally lost everything and survived to tell us how they rebuilt.
I'm Andy Krueger, the CEO of BuildSOS, a disaster resilience company, and we're diving into the human side of disaster recovery.
All right, so thanks for tuning in, and without further ado, let's jump into today's episode.
Kathy, thanks for coming on the show, the podcast. And I don't know if I have told you before kind of why we're doing this and how it came to be, but initially, as in the last couple of years, as I've been running BuildSOS, when I sit down with people, like for instance, a couple of years back, I sat down with the head of Louisiana Public Broadcasting, was telling him about BuildSOS. And of course, it's all disaster related, right? For preparedness, response, and recovery. Within 10 minutes of starting the conversation, he said, you know, I still have issues with my family going through the 2016 floods. I still have family that's down in these, you know, moldering FEMA trailers down by the river from back then. And it seemed like no matter where I went and who I talked to, especially down in, Louisiana and Gulf South, there was like a 50-50 shot that they were going to have a story that they would bring up and say, I'm so glad you're working in this space. This is so needed. And by the way, let me tell you what happened to me or somebody close to me that I knew. So we've had this idea for a while of let's give people a space to tell their stories. When Evan and I connected and got together, I mean, he's the perfect person to help have these conversations with his background and, you know, everything he's done. And then we actually initially started thinking about, well, maybe this is a TV show down the line, right? So I think I've mentioned to you before, this is something where there could be a show that follows people post-disaster on putting their lives back together, right? And it's got the human interest, it's got the natural conflicts of all the different parties coming together, right? Because you have contractors in your house that you may or may not know or may not fully trust. And then you have the insurance process with these, again, strangers coming in and telling you what you can and can't have, basically. And so there's a natural drama to it. And as Evan and I were fleshing that out, it's a big jump to do something like that, both organizationally and production, and then also financing and all that. So we said, well, why don't we just start talking to people on Zoom and getting the stories together and recording them, right? So we can have these smaller snippets and really help people out and also help the listeners to hear that they're not alone, right? To hear that they may have the same troubles that other people had going through a storm. They may have, we're talking to people who have done it really well, like surprisingly well, and even a shock to me of what some of these people do and know to do right after disaster. So I wanted to talk to you because I know, I mean, for everybody out there listening, so Kathy's my mother-in-law, and I actually met her daughter only a couple of months before Hurricane Katrina. We had an interesting trial by fire there, right? Because I had gone over to your house once for dinner.
I think I met you three times. And I think you came to my house maybe twice. And then I think I came to the dog park and we had a beer with the dogs and Mikkel one time. It was brief though, you know, just two dinners. And I think that one time at the dog park. And so when Katrina hit, you know, I was told both the kids, just get whoever you can and get to the North Shore, you know, get out of the city.
Do you remember that you called Mikkel, I think 17 times? The story from my perspective on it, my experience was, so in New Orleans, you have storms that come through all the time. And I had one more semester of business school. Mikkel and I had, you know, I started dating a couple months earlier. This was the Friday before the Monday when the levees broke. Was the booze cruise for Tulane for business school. So we had been out on the river. You couldn't invite anybody else. It was just the people who were in the first and second year classes, no guests, networking event. And so we went up and down the river and I think we were done at like one or two in the morning. And then I came back and I called Mikkel and I said, hey, you know, because she couldn't come with me. I said, you know, are you still awake? Do you want to go out? So we went out and I think we went to like a friend's house, like a house party or something. And I remember seeing this massive thing on the screen. I mean, the hurricane coming, but I think we'd not too long ago gone through Ivan or one of the other ones where it ended up blowing over and nothing happened. But I remember the next morning Mikkel telling me that she had woken up and you had called 17 times saying, you have to get out of it. And you, for all the listeners, you only lived an hour north. I mean, you're just on the North Shore across Lake Pontchartrain. Do you remember why you called so many times? Like, what was it that made you realize this is something that we need to worry about?
I remember like it was yesterday. This is one of those things you always, you know where you were and you know what happened. And like you said, everybody has a story because it's traumatic. So at the time we had the house on the North Shore where we were living. And we also owned a house. We had just bought it the summer before near Tulane. Jonathan, my son, Jonathan, five of his baseball friends were all roommates. Jonathan pitched baseball for Tulane going into his sophomore year. We had spent the summer fixing up that house, repainting it, new everything, just fixing it up. We had just bought it, fixed it up for the boys to move in. They had moved in less than a week before the storm hit. John, my previous husband, for those that don't know, and I, we were in Kiowa. We went to Kiowa for the week to visit my sister, and we were on vacation for the week. I remember watching the news a couple days before that, seeing there was a tropical storm in the Gulf. And so we would turn it on. And I remember on Friday, we put it on, put the news on, and we saw that it had turned into this hurricane and it turned towards New Orleans. So we decided on Friday afternoon, we have to get home. So we drove 13 hours on Saturday. We got up really early in the morning. We were like, we need to get home and get the kids out. And I remember calling Mikkel. I don't remember 17 times, but it probably was because I remember calling her and saying, Mikkel, get Andy, get your friends, get the dogs, go home, you know, to the North Shore, get out of the city now. And she was like, Miss Independent. So she was going to UNO renting a friend of ours had an apartment in their house and she was renting that. So she said, well, let me evaluate the situation and I'll get back to you, Mom. And I'm like, okay.
So on my side, what happened when she was evaluating is she contacted me and she said, do you want to, remember, this is the next morning after that we, you know, been out at this party. And she said, you want to go get some breakfast? So what we did is we were so non-impressed by Katrina that we walked a mile to breakfast. It was down Magazine Street to like Slim Goodies or something. We just spent an hour walking to breakfast. We had a long breakfast. We spent an hour walking back and then we took the dogs and I think we threw like a one or two small bags of clothes to come up your way. So that was how non-rushed we were.
And so when she hung up with me, I'm like, she needs to evaluate whatever. So I called up Jonathan. And I told him the same thing. I said, Jonathan, get friends, get home, go to the North Shore, get to our house on the North Shore, bring whoever you need to bring. I said, but get out of the city now. And he was like, we're already packing. Like they were already on it. Like we've already packed. We're on our way. Okay, good. So then I remember calling Mikkel back. And when I called her back, she said, we're on our way.
Do you remember what Jonathan packed though?
I don't remember what he packed.
He packed a can of tuna out of his baseball house. And I think maybe like a couple of pieces of clothes.
We finally get home. We had a 13-hour drive. I remember getting home Saturday night. I remember getting home and we had a house filled with, I think we had five dogs and about eight or nine people, which was great. I think you and Mikkel took my car over to the lakefront or something and lost the keys or something like that. I don't remember. Yeah. And then we're like, well, don't worry about it. We'll get them tomorrow, which never happened.
You had a Jaguar XK8. This British racing green convertible. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. So you're like, yeah, go, you know, take the car. And so we went down to the lakefront, which was 5 minutes from your house, right? The North Shore lakefront, just to see the wind coming in, right? And to see what the waves are doing. And yeah, we walked around and then we ended up dropping your keys somewhere on that big lawn there. And yeah, you're like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. That's fine. We'll find it tomorrow. So I'd forgotten about that.
So we drove, got home. And then I remember John not really wanting to leave. And I did. I was like, no, we need to get out of here. And he said, well, we'll look at it in the morning. So everybody went to bed. And the next morning at 4 a.m, I got up and put the TV on. And I woke him up. And I said, you need to see this. And he came out and he just looked at me. He goes, we're getting out of here. I don't remember if we woke everybody up or whatever, but we said, y'all, we need to leave. I remember packing for like 3 days because we thought the hurricane will come through and then we're going to come home. So we left. I remember leaving Jonathan and his friends in Baton Rouge with some of their college friends at LSU. It was only an hour away. It was out of the way. They'll be fine. We'll be back in a couple days. No big deal.
And do you remember, though, before you left, just chronologically, before you left, I remember he woke me up at 4 a.m. and said, we're getting out of here. But first, he needed our help to do some things. So I think you and Mikkel were doing some last minute packing. And John asked me, he said, look, things fly around in these storms. And one of the things that flies around is lawn furniture. I need you to go outside and look for any lawn furniture that can catch wind and fly around and throw it in the pool. I was like, what? And he said, yeah, throw it in the pool. I'm thinking, why would you do that? And he said, well, it's not, the wind is not going to catch it if it's submerged, and then we'll just come back. And I thought it was a pretty interesting and actually effective thing to do. So, but I do remember that, throwing everything in the pool. And I think Jonathan helped with that too.
I think so.
Did he get into that can of tuna?
He kept his tuna with him. He wasn't going to throw that in the pool.
And I forgot about the tuna, but now that you say that, I remember, because I think the following Christmas, we gave him tuna for Christmas or something as a gag gift. Yeah, so we had a caravan of cars with people, dogs. The traffic on the highway was so bad. Remember, we went the back roads. It took us 13 hours to make a 5-hour drive. We drove to a friend of ours who had a ranch in Texas. We drove to his house. He took us all in, which was so kind. Then we were glued to the TV for that night. And then the next morning, the storm hit Monday morning. It had turned a little bit more to the east. So I think it hit like 30 miles to the east of the city. But it was a pretty strong category 4 when it hit, or maybe I think it was around that. But after it hit, we were like, wow, like we dodged a bullet. Like New Orleans is going to be okay. We're going to get to come home. This is great. Not great. But I mean, we thought, wow, we really, you know, this wasn't as bad as we thought. And then within, I don't know what the time was, but it was shortly after that, we're watching the news and they're talking about how New Orleans was flooding. And I just remember being in shock, going, what in the world is going on? Like, I don't understand. And so the levees broke and the city was flooding. They had, of course, evacuated the city, but we owned the house in New Orleans. We had our house, you know, so everything was flooding. And I just remember being glued to the TV. I remember thinking how important it was that you all, my kids, were with me. Because I remember the one night, it was like, there's not enough room. Maybe you should go sleep at Gary's other house. And I did not like that at all. He's like, no, they need to come back here. Do you remember that, Andy? I was like, I want everybody with me. That was so important for us all to be together. That's when we learned how to text message too, because that's the only way we could communicate with our friends and, you know, was to text message. A lot of us learned how to text message during Katrina.
Do you remember how you and John arrived at going to Gary's place? Because for me, I was just along for the ride. And you guys said, we've got a friend in Sugar Land. We're going there. He's going to take us in. He's got space for everybody. But do you remember, was there a discussion of where do we go or what do we do?
That's where we got Poncho, our dog. And so Gary was a good friend. And he had this big, huge house on this big, huge piece of property. And we were just like, who can take in, you know, this many people and all these dogs? And Gary was single. John just said, let's call Gary. And that's what he did. And he said, yeah, come on. And I remember Gary, after a little while, he just looked at us like we were his family. I think when we left, he didn't want us to even leave. You know, it's like, we got to go home. And he's like, no, don't go yet. Wait a few more days. Like, he really loved having the chaos, I think. After the storm hit, we decided we needed to go check on our house. So I think we were gone for a total of 2 weeks from our house on the North Shore. New Orleans was still shut down, but we went back, checked on everything, picked up Jonathan. I think that was after just a couple of days. We went back. We had to get Jonathan because then we realized we're not going home in 3 days. We go back, check on the house. I mean, it was horrible. The closer we got, the worse it got. Telephone poles were down. Trees were blocking the entrance to our subdivision. Every third house had a tree through the roof. Our house had a tree clip the roof. And then we had water come in through the French doors that ruined our wood floors. Anyway, we checked on the house, got Jonathan, went back to Houston. And that's when Jonathan got the call that the whole baseball team was going to Lubbock, Texas for the semester. I was really upset because now I'm thinking my family, who all I want is to be with me, he's going to have to leave in a couple of days and go off And looking back, a semester is not that much time. But at the time, I felt like it was one of the worst things happening. And but anyway, so then we went shopping to buy him some clothes. And I remember people said, "You're from New Orleans. Well, you get a discount." And that's when I would cry. I was like, "I don't need a discount." But they did. And I thought people being kind was when I got the most emotional. And some lady, remember we went to breakfast one morning and some lady wanted to buy us our breakfast. We're like, "We don't need for you to buy us. Thank you, but no." And she said, "I can't take anybody in, but I want to do something. Please let me." And we were like, "Okay." So I think we took the money and donated it. I don't, you know, but I just think when people are being kind is when it really touches you the most.
Did I ever tell you that you just reminded me that I want to talk about how we ended up, you know, Mikel and I ended up on the West Coast, but after I was out there, and I think it was the next year even, because I had finished business school and I was a management consultant, I had parked my car outside of a client's office in the Mission District. It was next to a gas station. And I came out and somebody had clipped, like a hit and run, had hit my bumper and pulled the bumper off the front of the car. There was a note on the windshield that said, "I was going to just leave, but then I saw your Louisiana license plate and I couldn't do that. So here's my information." So somebody who was admittedly like, I'm a hit and run. Like, if I don't have to take accountability, they saw my Louisiana license plate less than a year later and said, "Boy, you must really be going through it. I'm not going to do this to you." So, yeah.
Wow.
Do you remember with the conversations about Mikel and me and where we're going to go and is she going to come with me? And
well, I remember, all right, so much happened between then and that, but I do remember when we all finally got back home, Mikel moved back home because she was in school online, and you immediately went to California, I think, to finish your degree, and Mikel just was miserable, and so I said, "Just do what you need to do to be happy, you know," and so she ended up moving to California, and that's one of the when you say, how did the storm affect you? Well, a lot of ways, but that's one of the biggest ways is that my daughter moved to the West Coast. That was tough. And then her friend stayed and lived with me for like 6 months. But, you know, then we had the house, so we had to fix our house. We came back a second time to check on our house before we actually came back. And we had heard all kinds of stories. People are looting. People have guns and they're going to hold you up for the gas. And you know, people are living in your homes. And we're like, "Oh my gosh, we need to go check on our house again." So I remember going in the backyard with Gary's and learning how to shoot guns. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. Yeah.
And we all learned how to shoot a gun because when we went back the second time, we brought guns with us in case somebody tried to steal our gas.
And do you remember the conversation too? It wasn't just because Gary, being a full Texan, he's like, "Which one of these guns do you want to take with you?" So he had, you know, the full armory. But after he taught us about that, and I do remember, you know, firing it in the backyard, do you remember the conversation when, because he had lent you and John his F-350, this massive pickup truck, right? And he had said, there was a conversation about, is it better to keep the handgun hidden in the truck, or is it better to put it on the dashboard as a sign to people, don't even try to stop us and, you know, loot us for gas or anything because we are armed? If I remember correctly, I think that the decision was to leave it on the dashboard.
Wow. I don't remember that, but it was a very scary time. We didn't know what we were going to walk into, drive into. We didn't know. There was nobody living in our house. Nobody stopped us to steal gas. We didn't need the gun. We went home, checked on the house. Of course, it's August. It's 100 degrees, no air conditioning, no electricity, no phones, no stores are open. So there's no reason to stay. And so we go back to Houston. And then finally, we did get back home. I remember we got a pass to get into the city early. We had a friend who got us into the city because we wanted to check on our other house. And I remember going down St. Charles Avenue. And Evan, if you don't know St. Charles Avenue, it's the street with all the mansions and it did not flood. And it's hustling and bustling, the streetcar. I mean, there was not a soul on that street. We were the only ones. We saw one military truck go down the road with some, you know, soldiers, whatever, in it, and the National Guard. And it was just a very eerie feeling to be in that city at that time.
I actually lived in New Orleans. I went to Tulane And I actually owned a house on Cambrone, which is back where they parked the streetcars in the Garden District.
Yeah.
And so I'm very familiar with every, you know, crossing Lake Pontchartrain. And I was watching from a distance everything, our houses that we had invested in get flooded as well, just from a distance. So yeah, I'm very familiar.
Yeah. And my house was in a Broadmoor. So it was raised about 3 feet, but it got 7 feet of water. It was a duplex. We had an upstairs apartment and a downstairs apartment. The upstairs, you know, the refrigerator, anything that had needed electricity was ruined. Downstairs, the refrigerator was turned over. It flooded. So everything was destroyed downstairs. So one of the hardest things for me was to have to call up all of those boys and tell them they had nothing left. And they didn't understand it. They said, but my clothes, they were hanging in the closet. I said, yes. I said, but there's no air conditioning and it's mold. You have mold growing up your clothes. And, you know, their furniture that was like, wasn't the nicest furniture, was all falling apart. One of the boys said, can you just save my baseball? He had like some special baseball cards with signatures. And I actually got them, took them home, sprayed them, put them in the sun and saved them. You know, I was like, this is important to him. If I can save one little baseball card for this kid, that makes me feel so good. So that was really hard. Because we got in so early, we were able to get contractors pretty quickly to get in there and start gutting it. And the front yard was like a mountain of debris from pulling everything out of the house. We had to completely gut the downstairs. And it took till May to get the house completely finished. It took the whole year, the whole school year.
Did you know the contractors ahead of time? How did you find them?
No, we just lucked out. I mean, we were in the house. There weren't a lot of people in the city yet, but somehow there were some contractors driving around and we found somebody that was going to go in and treat the mold. And I don't remember exactly how we found the contractors, but we did. When the boys came back after the first semester, the upstairs kids could move in, but they had no electricity. So we had the electrician took a line from their apartment, that house, and connected it to the house next door that was connected to the telephone pole so that they could get electricity. It was a crazy time in the city. And they lived like that until May. And then one of the best feel-good stories for me was I was standing in the yard in May, and one of the players was walking back to the house. He lived in our house. And I was standing in the front yard, and I looked down. I saw this little white thing. I didn't know what it was, but it was under the dirt. And now keep in mind, there was like a mountain of stuff before, but now it's all cleared. It's just the grass, the dead grass, really. And I see this white thing and I start kicking at it. And I remember saying, Matt, come over here. There's something in the ground right here. And we started digging and it was his special baseball that was covered with professional baseball players' signatures. And it was his ball. And I saw that little white thing and we digged and he was so excited to get his baseball back. Now that's a God story because that is not a coincidence. That kid that came down and it was his baseball. But little things like that, when you lose everything, something that small, it just made you feel so good.
What about your house up on the North Shore? Because didn't you have something with insurance? How did that go with your insurance? I remember something about the wavy roof and the fire damage. Yeah.
So the water came in through the French doors into the living room and we had to replace the wood floors. And we also had to replace part of the roof where the tree clipped the edge of the roof, but it didn't make a hole into the house, luckily for us. I don't remember dealing with the insurance company. I know we did, but I don't remember that. I don't think that sticks out in my mind. Now, Jeff has better stories about that if you want to talk about insurance companies, what he dealt with his, but I don't remember too much. You know, because maybe John handled that. I don't really remember that so much.
Did you ever find the Jaguar?
Oh, the Jaguar. I think they went back and got the extra key and brought the car back to the garage.
We're joking afterwards. Those keys were in like Mississippi after that storm. I mean, A couple things, Kathy, I'm curious about. One of the things I remember going back to staying at Gary's was the stark difference between the experience we were having there with him and what other people were going through, we were seeing on TV in real time, right? Like when you had the news helicopters circling over the Superdome and the people on the overpass. And as they were discovering, you know, bodies and things, I remember Gary treated us so well. I remember those, that one night he made those cowboy steaks. I mean, they must've been like 30 ounce steaks for all 9 or 10 of us. How nice it was there. And then there was the livestock, I mean, the horses. And we were joking about, we had the dogs that were running around like your Bichons going nose to nose with the horses and the cow out there. And I just remember that was one of the first times I felt it was kind of hard to deal with the fact that I'm having an okay time. I know psychologically all this is happening and I'm going to be affected, but in the moment we were almost having fun out there, right? I mean, we went to his second house and played pool and had pitchers of beer. And so did you have any thoughts around that, or how was it for you?
A lot of people in New Orleans, there's so much poverty. They couldn't get out. They weren't taken care of the way they should have been. You know, they all went to the Superdome. That was like the last resort. If you can't get out, this is what they were told. If you can't get out, go to the Superdome. So they did. And I mean, people died there. The Superdome was destroyed. I mean, it was really damaged badly. So, I mean, the Saints didn't even play there that whole season. We had season tickets, and I think they played in San Antonio, if I remember correctly. That was an amazing feeling the following year, though, because when the Saints came back the following year, we had Sean Payton and Drew Brees. And I'll never forget going to that first game. And we had, you know, the new coach and the new quarterback. And I think we played the Falcons, who, you know, is our rivalry between them and the Saints. And we won the game. But just being there before the game even started, I just remember all the people. It just brought the city back together. It was something positive for the city. I'll never forget that feeling because we were there and it was just unbelievable. But getting back to your question, yeah, I mean, you know, I had friends who stayed, who didn't leave. My next door neighbor didn't leave, and he had a tree come through the middle of his house, you know, and he was what, like a 50-year-old man. And he said, I will never stay again. And that's all I can ever tell anybody is if you have any kind of storm coming, you need to get out. I mean, get your family, your dogs, your whatever, and get out of there because it's not worth staying. I think I have PTSD from what I experienced. I can't imagine having lived through that and stayed there for that. There's a lot of sad stories, people being trapped up in their attics that couldn't get out, having to be rescued off the roof. And, you know, that was all on the South Shore, you know, like the Ninth Ward, and that area still, some of it's not even rebuilt. But
yeah. How many years would you say you took until you felt like you were past Katrina? Or do you?
Like I said, I feel like I could tell the stories like it was yesterday. The way that it affects me now is when there are other storms that come and hit wherever they hit, I have a hard time watching that on TV. I got very emotional watching it. I really have a hard time watching. I cry. I mean, watching people go through what they go through, it just brings it right back. Even though, like Andy said, we were in a good place. But when we came home, we saw the destruction, like I said, the trees that were down and the telephone poles and the homes that were ruined, and just knowing what happened in the city with the people in the hospitals, you know, some of those patients, they died. And that was really sad.
So you stayed in New Orleans for a year. I mean, you only moved permanently out of the city a couple of years ago. So did you see any marked shift in New Orleans as a city, as a culture, like pre and post personally? Did you see anything shift or?
So, you know, we lived on the North Shore most of the time, but then I did move back into the city. I think a lot of it is back to normal. Any place like that you would go is back to normal. I think a lot of the people that left and didn't come back, I think a lot of that has come back. But I think if you go to certain areas, like if you go over to the Ninth Ward where the flooding was really, really bad, you're going to see signs of it. I don't go over there, so I can't really say for sure. But I think if you were just to come back to the city now, as far as Katrina goes, you know, there's a whole lot of other problems. But as far as Katrina goes, I think that it's back to normal. You know, the fact that Mikkel moved away, that was huge for me. You know, we fixed our house. We fixed the house that we owned for Jonathan. And the baseball team played in, we have a AAA team in Metairie. And that's where they played for 2 years because the baseball field flooded. You know, they didn't play there for their sophomore or junior year at their home, you know, the home field.
So, and now you're in Old Naples, right? So you are not exactly out of hurricane danger. Is there anything that you take from that experience that you apply now, whether, you know, positively or negatively, or lessons learned or advice for other people?
Well, the biggest thing is not to just take it for granted that a storm is not going to come this way. You know, whenever we have a tropical storm, I watch it. We watch it. We always have. And if it starts to head our way, we leave. I would never stay. I live 2.5 blocks from the beach. I love where I live and I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And I guess that was one of the things after Katrina, people would say, why are they going to rebuild New Orleans? It's below sea level. Look what happened. Why do these people want to live there? Well, other people shouldn't judge because they're not the people living there. And they don't know that New Orleans is a city filled with culture and good people. And it's where we live. You know, it's our home. People, that's where they're from. And they love their city. And to just say they shouldn't rebuild it because they're living somewhere above sea level that and they don't want to put the money into it. You know, I think that they need to rethink that. Because people love where they live and they know the risks and they're willing to, you know, rebuild because they love where they are. And like right now, living where we live, yeah, the hurricanes, we've had a couple. I feel like most hurricanes, by the time they hit Naples, they are not a hurricane. So they can either come across the state and go back into the Gulf, or if they're in the Gulf, very rarely do they turn around and come back towards Naples. But they have, like we had one a couple years ago, but I'm not afraid of them. I respect them. There's risks everywhere you go. And I love living in the South and I love living near the water and I love being on the water and I just respect it.
There's a question that we ask everybody that we talk to, and I'm hoping it continues to be useful. In fact, you kind of teed it up beautifully by saying that you would tell anybody, respect the storm and leave if you see mm-hmm. it coming. But what would you say to someone 5 minutes after they've experienced that kind of disaster? What would you tell them to do?
If they stayed, you mean, and they experienced that?
Or just in general, like after you've experienced that kind of loss, the five, yeah. like immediacy after you realize that your home is gone, what would you tell those people?
Just to have hope and to know that, you know, if they survived it, they're going to be okay. You know, I have a really strong faith, so I always turn to God and pray. And I know that God's got us and he's going to take care of us. And I know that he would for them too. And it's not easy, but we were told that we're going to have trials and tribulations in our life. And it's how we deal with them that matters. And so that's what I would tell them, that just to have hope and know that there are people that will help them. You know, people are there to help. I've never seen so much kindness as I've seen after a storm. You know, the trucks pouring into the city filled with supplies. The people buying your breakfast, the people that want to give you the discount, people that took us in, you know, people are there for each other after storms like you've never seen before. I've lived through other storms where, you know, different areas flooded and our church, we get teams together. We make food. We go out and help people gut their homes that can't afford it or that don't have insurance. There are so many good people in this world. And that's when you really see the kindness out of everybody.
It's an odd thing that it takes, you know, these sort of situations. And I, as I mentioned before, I experienced Katrina. I've also had a house fire. And out of something so awful does come some of the most beautiful experiences that I know I've had in life or that I've witnessed, like you said. It's an interesting phenomenon. Nobody would wish that on anybody. But when you've been through it and you experience that sort of community and love that, you know, we're so starved for in this world right now, it's a positive.
Yeah. And that's the good that comes out of it. So that's my Katrina story. Annie, do you have anything to add? That's when I really fell in love with Andy. I didn't know him very well before then, but I got to know you really well when yeah. we were in Houston.
Yeah.
That's when I realized what a great guy you are.
No, well, thanks. I mean, if you want to get to know your potential future in-laws really well, move in with them after 3 months of yeah. dating.
yeah. And the dog and Zeke. I was so afraid. Andy had a pit bull. And I was one of those people that generalized about, you know, I have the pit bull, scary dog, mean. Zeke, that pit bull, he came with us and he was the biggest love of a dog. I remember him sleeping with us and being just the sweetest dog. So that changed the way I felt about pit bulls too.
yeah, he was a big marshmallow for sure. That was like the major disaster, right, of your time in New Orleans. There wasn't really anything else that was, I mean, clearly nothing that compares.
Nothing like that. On the North Shore, you know, it flooded all along the lake. The power of water is amazing. I mean, anything on the bottom floor was just washed away. And it took years for them to rebuild over there as well. Yet that was the worst storm. I've been through other ones where, you know, I was in Pensacola for a little while with Jeff. And there were storms, tropical storms came through where the streets flooded, our garage flooded. We were gone for a couple of the storms when Carolyn went over and had to just like clean out the garage. But the condo itself was on a second floor, was fine. So Katrina was definitely the worst.
And you got me thinking too about the house. So Evan, another funny little story about that house is one time, I think this was after Katrina. This might have been back when Mikkel and I had moved back from California, gotten married, and we were living in Covington. You had left at the time. You were out maybe seeing Jonathan for a baseball game. You were gone for a couple of days. You had Poncho with you, your dog. And you had wanted me to come over and check on the house. I was doing something with the house. And I remember, so I went over to check on the house on, you know.
Left Poncho. We were just gone for a night. We went to Mississippi for a baseball game.
That's what it was. So I went over, two-story house. And I remember I went over there and I fed Poncho. And then I used the bathroom on the second floor before I left. And then I left. Then I went back, you know, went to bed. Then the next morning I got up to go back and go feed Poncho. And I remember opening your front door and being like, is it raining? It's not raining outside, but I hear like there was this moment of disconnect. And I remember walking in, I'm like, it's absolutely, there's something wrong here. You know, when you're trying to figure out and rationalize what your senses are taking in versus what you think is happening. And I walked into your living room and it was raining through from the second floor, coming through all your light fixtures and through your bathroom. And I remember calling you up and I was like, Kathy, it's raining in your house. And you're like, what? And I said, no, it's inside. It's not raining outside.
You said my house was flooded. Your house is flooded.
It was flooded. Flood. And this was the house that had been restored already, right? So she had a one step down, huge recessed living, right? So you walked in and then it was one step down. And this is one of those things that in retrospect, I mean, I think I just lucked out or had a guardian angel or something, but the water had collected in there. So it was a, you know, like a 3-inch, 4-inch pool. And I remember going in there to try to pull stuff out of there, but it was also where you had all of your outlets. So you're
right in the floor,
was submerged in the floor. Mm-hmm. And I was walking around in the water with the outlets all the way around the outside. And so I remember, you know, going through, you and I, you came right home from where you were.
I remember saying to you, Andy, get out of there. We have an outlet in the floor. You need to get out of the water. I remember saying that to you.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so what it ended up being was there was a little 75-cent piece of white plastic something that was in the toilet actuator upstairs. And when I had flushed it, that thing broke. Yep. And it just kept on running all night and it just ran all the way over. And it was a full, 12 hours of that running flooded the entire house.
Yeah. So see, it doesn't take a hurricane to flood your home.
No.
After Katrina, another thing, when Mikkel went back to her apartment, she was robbed.
Was that in San Francisco or here?
That was in New Orleans. I mean, San Francisco too, but no, this was after Katrina when she went back to her apartment. Somebody had gotten in and they robbed her.
I remember that. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. You know what was funny about, she and I was laughing about it, is they went through, back then it was DVDs, right? So she had this big DVD collection. They went through and only chose the DVDs of the movies they liked. We only have the DVDs of their favorite movies, the thief's favorite movie is gone. I remember that. And the only reason that didn't happen with my condo, which was over by Magazine Street, I was on one side of the L and on the other side, the only person that stayed was this guy who was a Norwegian ex-military in his late 60s at the time. And he had stayed there with a shotgun and on the balcony, because we had, you know, the gates that slid, but you could pop over, you could just hop the gates. And whenever somebody tried to jump into the complex, he would whistle at them and point the shotgun at them and they'd run away.
And then you would see these people looting stores in water up to their waist, carrying big, huge TVs. And it's like, that was a crazy time.
It was.
Andy, I'm so impressed that you remember any of this because I don't remember any period of time for when I met my wife and we were falling madly in love. And we burned a house down in that period, I would say. And I do remember some of it, but like your attention to detail is phenomenal.
Don't ask me what I had for breakfast this morning, because I can't remember that. But these things stuck in my head, you know?
It really does. I mean, it's so traumatic. And then, like I said, most of my memories are just when people were being kind, you know, or finding that baseball, or, you know, and then the really hard moments, like calling the boys and Jonathan leaving and you moving and Mikkel moving. Those were the things. It was all good. We all survived.
Well, thanks so much for getting on and going through all those memories. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Andy.
Hey, thanks for listening to Disaster Diaries. And if you're moved by these stories that you've heard, please subscribe, leave a review, and share the show with someone that you think needs it. And to tell your own story, download the Disaster Diaries app, available at all app stores, or visit disasterdiaries.com. And if you're looking for help rebuilding, check out buildsos.com for support, tools, and resources to help you better prepare for, respond to, and recover from disasters.